There are a lot of haunted places in the world, either twisted and befouled by the acts of man, or retaining sinister remnants from the old days of chaos magic. This show has visited a lot of these places. The Crooked Neck, the Devil's Triangle, the Nevada Cave System, Briscoe, Kipo Flats, Short Knap, Pierre Narota, Home, the Old Forests, the Ghastly Gardens, the breach sites like Cannibal Island and the lair of the Trapdoor Spider. Grace, Michigan is a place such as those. In 2013, Grace was the setting for a mass escape from a secret DRO holding facility. A diverse and terrifying array of serial killers descended on the town in what came to be called the Night of the Long Knives. The following day, the entire area was consumed in a forest fire. The town was never rebuilt. No one ever came back. It was bleak, blasted, and dead. But there was more. Another layer. In a place like this, where such horror and carnage has been wrought, there was still the lingering dread left behind by that night, and it clung to the ground like early morning fog. These dark, haunted places appeal to a certain kind of tourist, a certain kind of history buff, people who want to be close to something terrible and feel that residual evil. These places also appeal to another kind of person, true believers, who think places like this hold a special power, perhaps even a way to reach out across the void to the other side. This is a friendly game of tag. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem. Killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. Joan didn't really want to go camping, but Lenny had a way of talking her into things. It was those big, magical, chocolatey brown eyes of his. Just a little too big, and so damn expressive. She always caved. And things usually ended up working out for the best anyway, if she was being honest. As Lenny told her, and he told her often, she was a worrywart. Sometimes it was best to just go with the flow. This time, the flow was leading Joan to Grace. Or, more accurately, the blasted piece of Michigan that used to be called Grace before it and most of the hundreds of acres of surrounding forest was razed. Lenny had been trying for weeks to book a murder Airbnb cabin in that area, but the waiting list was still way too long, which is how he came up with the idea of camping instead. "Isn't it illegal?" she said. "Maybe a teeny, tiny, eensy-weensy, low-key misdemeanor, but Who's going to know? Who's going to care? Cops aren't out there in the middle of a burned out forest. Which brings me to my next point, Lenny. I don't want to stay in the middle of a burned out forest. Babe, come on. It's not dangerous. I'm not saying it's dangerous. I'm saying it's the scene of a massacre and a forest fire, and it doesn't sound at all fun to me. Yeah, but listen, I know the podcast you like is all about this place. I get it. You showed me the videos they did. It was very scary and very cool and all that stuff. But, babe, please? And there were those eyes again. Well, what's in it for me? Joan asked. Anything you want, name it. Huh. What about that one thing? You know. Lenny blushed and folded his arms across his chest. I thought we talked about that. We did. Now we can talk about it again, because you said anything. Okay, fine. But we get to do my thing first. Okay. Joan grinned. Gives me something to look forward to. The following weekend, they loaded up for the trip. It was a day's travel each way, and in between, 2 days and two nights in the woods outside of Grace. Although it had been a few years, Lenny still had his camping gear from college, when crazy road trips like this were a frequent occurrence. It was a 12-hour drive. But a good 12 hours. They took turns, one driving while the other picked music and followed the GPS map. Until they got a few miles out, at which point Lenny insisted on navigating. He turned off his phone and asked Joan to do the same. Just in case, he said. Just in case what? I don't know. DRO stuff? Check this out. He unfolded a map printed on office paper, showing which side roads to take to slip into the area, and which roads to avoid. Joan edged onto a narrow gravel rut and snaked back through the blistered forest of broken, charred tree stumps. It got darker gradually, easing into ashen gray moonlight before they knew it. She was driving about 4 or 5 miles an hour, but now, as dark as it was, she pumped the brakes to slow down. Are we looking for someplace in particular? Not really. I was sort of hoping we'd stumble across one of the remnant buildings. That's what they call them on the podcast. There are a few houses and other places that just survived the fire somehow. Abandoned, just as they were. It would be cool if we found one. But how about we just camp? Is here good? She said. She stopped with the headlights aimed at a patch of clearing where the ground was free and even. The air here was so thick with that smoky mist, or was it misty smoke, that it seemed to move through the headlight beams in currents like murky water. Joan stayed behind the wheel, watching as Lenny unloaded the gear and set up camp. They had a 2-person tent with LED lights inside, and another light mounted over the front flaps. Instead of building a fire, which they both agreed was a bad idea and unnecessary, Lenny put out a little electric camp stove and set two low-slung chairs next to it. When the work was complete, Joan joined him. They cracked open a couple of cold beers from the cooler and relaxed. "It is creepy here," she said, and cracked her second beer. There was definitely a vibe, and it wasn't an enjoyable one. "It is just like they said it would be," Lenny agreed. His eyes roamed, not able to see far, even with the suffocated light of the three-quarters moon. "Like, you can feel that something bad happened here. You can really feel it." He touched the ground with his palm, thinking that it might be humming. But it wasn't. So he had a second beer as well. "So, what else is on that map?" Joan asked. "We got any hot spots to check out tomorrow?" "Hot spots. You see what I did there?" "Yeah, baby. I see what you did there. And yes, there are a couple that I'd like to try and find." It had been a long day, so they clicked off the heater and went into the tent. Normally, Lenny would start barking up her tree, but this place had a dampening effect on the both of them. So they put their backs together and slept for a while. Lenny woke up sometime later. Checking his watch, he saw it was almost 4 a.m. Was it a sound that had woken him? He just started awake. He didn't remember why. He listened carefully, but heard nothing else. Still, he crept out of the tent and plucked the LED light off the front and then walked a wide circle around the campsite. It wasn't a sound that had woken him. It was a smell. Smoke. And not that old smoky smell that clung to this place. This was fresh, something burning right now. With slight notes of, there it was, meat. Hog, wasn't it? Roasting over a fire. Lenny thought it was an odd time of night for a barbecue, but hey, country folks were like that. He enjoyed the smell for a few moments, and then went back into the tent, where he found Joan sitting up, clutching her chest, and then she felt her face carefully from top to bottom. "Joan, what is it, baby? Did you have a dream about someone on fire? They were right outside the tent. They pointed at me. It was so real. I could feel the heat on my face. What's that smell?" Lenny surprised her in the morning with turkey bacon and English muffins, both of which were burned all to shit, but it was still a nice way to start the day. He gave Joan the map and took the wheel as they went exploring. Even in the broad of day, this was an arduous process. Whatever roads had been there weren't that great to start with, and most of them were blocked either partially or entirely. She guided him what she thought was the best way. But it wasn't a great map. She said, I think somebody made this on paint and sent it as a screenshot. The fuck, Lenny? What year is this? Instead of being a worrywart this time, especially after that horrible nightmare she had, Joan was being a bit of a ball breaker. Lenny took it with good nature and aplomb. After all, he was getting just what he wanted. It took about 45 minutes, and Lenny wouldn't let her play any music because he was trying to concentrate. Finally, they found what he had been looking for. It wasn't much to look at, the remnants of a hardware store, missing a roof, two walls, and most everything else, too. It wasn't until Joan got out of the car that she realized they were parked on a paved road. It was just deeply covered in inches worth of dirt, ash, and charred ribbons of wood and bark. Lenny went to the building and started taking pictures. Joan looked around, but saw no other landmarks. But there was another car. Just a glint of chrome and a snippet of faded blue, and then it was lost in the fog and smoke. Babe, come look at this. She did, and wasn't sure what she was supposed to be seeing. This was the hardware store where John Sunday was killed. The machinist, you remember him? Of course. His pet monster, Razormouth, was with him. And some girl shot them both down. Then they burned up in the fire. Right here, where we are standing. He let the profundity of the moment sink in, and then grabbed her shoulder and said, "Selfie!" After that, they went north. There was an area on the map circled in red, the alleged site of the Deep Red Ops facility that caused all this madness. Lenny had been told it was impossible to access, but it might be possible to see it from a distance. Maybe even get some pics. They weren't anywhere close to where the circle indicated when they encountered a fence. Not a gate, just a fence. It wasn't fancy, just double chain link. But it was tall, and it was new. It couldn't have been here for more than a few months. They drove alongside the fence for a quarter of a mile or so, till they finally found a sign. It read, "Premises secured by the Department of Restricted Operations. Leave the area immediately." "Okay, you saw the sign," Joan said sharply. "Let's just drive a little longer, babe." "No. Fuck no. And I'm not being a worrywart. This is just common sense. The DRO says go away. And you don't want to go away." "Joanie," he cooed. And he gave her those magical eyes again. "Lenny, fucking stop it right now. Let's go. We don't have to go right now. Let's just leave here, get back to camp, and then we can talk about it, okay?" He knew she was right. "Okay," he nodded. And they turned around and headed back. Another half hour later, they were approaching where they had left their tent. "Did you see a car earlier?" she asked. "No." "Look in the rear view, way back." He stopped and then stared. And yes, he saw it. There it was. Weird, right? "Not really, babe," he said, a little unsure. "It's probably someone like us. A bunch of folks come out here. It might even be somebody I know from the subreddit." "I don't know, Len. It feels weird. Keep going." Although it was still the middle of the afternoon, the clouds were heavy, and the amber glow of dusk permeated the smoky air around them. Because of this, it wasn't until they got close, too close, that they saw there were people waiting at their campsite. A half a dozen of them, loitering in a tight circle around the stove, which had been cranked up to the max, as if they enjoyed the heat. "What do you think we should do, babe?" "I think we should forget about our stuff and just keep going." "Okay, but I think that..." He was interrupted when that following car hit them from behind. It wasn't hard, just a fender bender, but enough to whip them both forward in their seats. Lenny jumped out of the car and started shouting. He saw that there were several other people in the trailing car. They all got out too. Joan tried to scoot over, move behind the wheel, but there was a tapping on her window. The men from the camp stove were now standing next to the passenger door. They were dressed normally, jeans and boots and t-shirts and flannel, but they all had scars, burns on their hands, their arms, their necks. Any place skin was visible, it was covered in old burns. Just like the men getting out of the car behind them. One of them said to Joan, "Come on out now. We don't want to hurt you. We just want to play a friendly game of tag." She shook her head. "Come on. You have to play. You were chosen. I saw it in my dream. The effigy stood right here where I'm standing, and he pointed right there." The man pointed towards their tent. "He pointed at you. He told us where to find you. And judging the look on your face, I'd say you had the same dream." Lenny fought, briefly, and was beaten. Joan didn't fight. With so many people, 11 by her count, there was only one possible outcome. She tended to Lenny and let the men load them into the back of their own car and then drive deeper into the Deadlands. There was no way in hell these degens just wanted to play a game of tag. But until she figured out how to get herself out of this mess, she had to play along. They didn't go far. winding down into a shallow, narrow valley. It wasn't much, but would hide the light of fires from distant watchers. There were a half dozen vehicles parked closely together at one end of the valley, with tarps strung between them for makeshift tents. There were also scorch marks on the ground, fresh and an ugly shade of char. Little circles and ovals where contained fires had been set and where they had burned intensely. And all around, in clusters and clutches, were fuel containers. Gas cans, half drums, plastic jugs filled with viscous, gooey gel the color of gasoline. The driver turned to look at them in the back seat. It was the same man who spoke to her earlier. His face was tight and pink, and the goatee that ringed his mouth was filled with little twisted curlicues from standing too close to the heat. He said, "Our little group here, our tribe, we lost someone important to us last night. He said he was ascending, but there is no way for us to know for sure, not yet. We need a new leader, and you are going to help us." "Sir," Joan said softly. "Please." Lenny cut in. "I'll do it, man. Whatever, I don't care, I'll do it. She didn't even want to come out here, and I made her. Just let her go, and I won't try and fight you again. I promise, please." Until that moment, Joan had never been 100% sure that Lenny really loved her. What a way to find out. "I'll tell you what," the driver said. "Let's compromise. You play tag with us, and if that settles it, then it's settled, and we'll let her go. I swear on a burning Bible. But if you don't play right, if it doesn't work out, well then, she's next." I said, "I'll do whatever you want." One of the other men let Lenny out of the car. The driver followed suit, and Joan was left alone. Damn it, he took the keys with him. She watched a few men lead Lenny away into the sand, into an empty plot near one of the other scorch marks. She couldn't hear what they were saying, but she could clearly see the shocked look on Lenny's face. He was scared. He was terrified. So much so that he tried to run. The men dragged him down and held him there. Joan was taken from the car. One of them had a gun now. She hadn't seen it before. She couldn't see it now. But she felt it, the barrel pressed against the back of her skull. She went to her knees. When Lenny saw this, he stopped fighting. He did what they wanted. He stripped naked, down to his socks and his watch. And he knelt down before the men. The gun was removed from Joan's head, and the lunatic holding it started to explain to her what she was seeing. "When we need a new leader, we play a game of tag. I don't know if it has an old-timey, fancy name. We just call it tag. And when you play tag, someone has to be it. That's the chosen one. Your boy there. He's it. A crown of twisted twigs and knotted vines was placed upon Lenny's head. First, he needs to dress the part. Then, we need to give him what he needs to satisfy the effigy. They started to douse Lenny in that viscous gasoline gel, smearing it all over him, right up to the top of his cheekbones, because they wanted him to see and hear what happened next. Lenny was sobbing, chest heaving, limbs quivering. That's homemade napalm. Honestly, it's just premium gas with soap shavings in it. But we use a cheese grater, so they damn near dissolve in the gas. It's a thing of beauty. They lit the crown on fire and retreated a few paces. See, when the fire spreads, it's going to cover him like that. He will be the man on fire. The avatar for the effigy. And then, let me tell you, he's going to start running around like a chicken with its head cut off. But we don't run away. Oh no, we don't run away from it. Someone here is going to get marked. Someone here is going to be the new leader. That's up to the effigy. That's tag. The wooden crown burned rapidly, the flames growing ever closer to Lenny's hair and the flammable gel on his face and the back of his neck. There was no more time. Joan was desperate. She turned on her knees, throwing a handful of sand into the lunatic's face. It only bought her a second, but that's all she needed to snatch the gun from his singed fingers. She aimed at his chest and pulled the trigger. Click. The man chuckled. It ain't loaded. You're too valuable to kill with bullets. And then Lenny shrieked. And it was soul-crushing, a howl of primal power, pain beyond human capacity to process. She felt it in her marrow. It squeezed tears from her eyes. And she turned to see Lenny running in a little circle, alight from head to foot. The flames engulfed him like a suit, just like the person from her dreams. The others gathered in closer and closer to Lenny, hooting and hollering and asking for his blessing. But it was all too much for him. Lenny wasn't possessed by a spirit. He was just a man burning to death. And he quickly collapsed in a heap. Joan ran to his side, fell to her knees, started throwing sand on him, rolling him around, trying to put out the flames. But Lenny was not just on fire, he was coated in a jelly that was on fire. So it cooked the meat of her hands to the second degree, and she yelped. She could not put him out. She could not save him. She could only try and save herself. Joan! Lenny screamed with a fully cooked tongue. He reached up blindly, his eyes having boiled in their sockets, and he grabbed her by the side of her head. It scorched her. She pulled away sharply, and with it, she pulled away the stringy, juicy flesh from his palm and fingers. It peeled away from the bone and clung to the side of her face, glued by the napalm, still burning. She rubbed her face into the dirt and heard a man shouting, "He's still alive! The effigy is still with us!" They all gathered in close, hoping to be touched with a flaming hand. Joan rolled onto her side and bumped into something. A gallon milk jug, half filled with that sticky, icky, burning homemade napalm. If Lenny didn't touch one of these assholes to mark them as their leader, then his sacrifice would be for nothing. Then she would be it next. So Joan did what she had to do. "Sorry, Lenny," she said to herself. And then she underhand tossed that gallon jug onto his burning body. It burst, exploding, splashing all the men around it with that napalm gel. It made them all men on fire. There were a handful of others along the fringes who were unharmed. But none of them seemed interested in Joan. Instead, they ran gleefully towards their blazing brethren, believing that they would be blessed. All except for one, the man who had the gun to her head. Now he was the one kneeling, looking up at her. "You've been touched," he said. "You've been marked." Joan peeled the last of her boyfriend's flesh from her cheek. Beneath was an ugly burn mark in the shape of a hand. "You've been blessed by the effigy. You lead us now." Joan walked past him. She walked past the vehicles. She walked out of the valley. From the smoky darkness behind her, that man shouted, "He'll come to you in your dreams. The effigy will guide you. He will guide you back to us." She just kept walking. But she knew the man was right. She knew this wasn't over. Because in her dreams, that burning figure Joan had seen looked just like her. Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. Find the show on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. Or you can contact us directly at ascaryhomecompanion podcast@gmail.com. For inside intel on upcoming episodes and more, click over to the show Patreon page. You can sign up for free to stay in the loop, or become a paying member to get oodles of extras, dozens of bonus episodes, and scores of analysis videos. I'll also mail you a free signed copy of the book, Bedtime Stories for Weird Kids. You'll also have access to the upcoming horror role-playing game that we are building. This very episode will serve as one of the quick play one-shot modules that come with the game's sourcebook. How about that? Join Patreon today and make an old man happy. Music this episode was Diverse and Amazing. Orbits with Feel Burn It. Presser with The Smell That You Like. Soul on Strings with Burn the Unbeliever. Tag Cloud with A Controlled Burn. And Chelsea Oxendine with the theme music.